Morning Show at East Coast. Now, my next guest is author Tony O'Reilly. He's here with his new book, inspired by his grandfather. The book centres around the Monto, which was the largest red light district in Europe at the turn of the 20th century. And Tony is here to tell us more. You're very welcome, Tony.
Yeah, thanks very much, Declan. Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. Monto, let's establish that one first.
Yeah.
Montgomery Street, Gloucester Street, Sean McDermott Street, as it is now, all that area.
Yeah, it was built from the 1860s. It was formed around the 1860s and it ended in 1925, but it was the biggest red light district in Europe. And roughly, for anybody who lives in Dublin, it's Gardiner Street, Talbot Street, Amien Street, and it ended out around, as you say, Sean McDermott Street, which is Gloucester Street. And there was about 1,600 prostitutes working there. It was very, very sad, like, you know.
Indeed.
The prostitution used to be mainly on the south side, but then with the changing shape of the city, what happened was they started to move over to the north side, and then the Monto area, for some reason, I can't quite fathom that, it's turned into a slum. So the rents were cheaper. All the madams moved over there, opened up houses, and then it just became it's like a de facto Casablanca. It was like a small republic, yeah, in the middle of Dublin
and
city.
And were they tenement houses that were
they
on
were
there?
Tenement houses. From what I can gather, around the early 1800s, you got your British lords and ladies or whatever coming over, and one lady for some reason decided, no, that's not for me. And just from that period, like, well, it's not good enough for her, it's not good for us. And then you get a spiral. So that area just started to go down.
Right, because it's next door to Mountjoy Square, which is a gorgeous square.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And then on one border, you have the Magdalene Laundry. It was called the Magdalene Asylum. So you think, how could they coexist? And the Pro-Cathedral was just
around
street,
the corner.
Street away. So they're trying to figure out, how did this happen? So I was just fascinated by that idea of the whole, it appeared in Joyce, of course, in Ulysses, in the chapter 10, I think, the Nighttown chapter. Stephen Dedalus went up there with Leopold Bloom, and they spent the night there. And then it was King Edward VII, I think, he lost virginity there. Allegedly, he lost his virginity there when
he's not
going to
sue us anyway.
No. Well, I hope not. Well, a lot of royal problems going on at the minute. So.
Indeed. So you're interested in this too. Well, tell us about yourself first of all, and then we'll come to the story.
Well, I started writing about, I think it was about 10 years ago or so. I went to an evening class for French and it was full. So the next alternative was a short story writing class. So I took that. I enjoyed it. So I said, right, I'll go next year. But the only course open was advanced. So I said, oh, will I chance it? So I went into the advanced course and I started writing kind of serious short stories and that. Won a few competitions. And then the teacher said, right, it's time for you guys to put your feet in the water. Start writing novels, you know. So I'm a touch typist, so it's no problem. I said, right, I'll do 1,000 words a day.
And
I started churning out books and leaving them in drawers and that. And this particular book started just before COVID. The Kate National Literary Agency had a competition. If you had a synopsis, a couple of chapters, they would guide you through the processes. Now, they're in the UK, but they did it all through Zoom. And I started then. I was very lucky in the fact that one of the agents there, Justin, he was very interested in the period himself. And he picked me up on a lot of stuff about the British Army, the type of weapons to use, etc. So he was a great help. So, because he was saying to me one day, when the main character comes in, he takes a dagger out of his boot, or a bayonet out of his boot, and he said, Tony, on Zoom, he said, Tony, you wouldn't put a bayonet down. He said, this is a bayonet. And he takes out his thing. It's like a Crocodile Dundee moment. He takes those things like a sword.
Right. So this is a bayonet.
This is a real bayonet.
Yeah. So the book is then is about that, but you mentioned your grandfather. It's around the 1916 rising and that era.
Yeah, it was. It's set in the week after the 1916 rising, and I based the main person on my grandfather, who I was reading the census 1901. He lived. He was born in Wall Lane, I think it was, in the Liberties, in 1896, and there was a family there. There was himself, his brother. So himself, his sister, and his parents. And then in the 1911 census, the whole family are gone. It's just himself and a brother who'd been born subsequently. So I began to ask my mother and my aunts, what happened then? And I said, well, he was taken in by Mrs. Sherry, who lived on Francis Street. And I said, that was very kind, because she already had a husband, a son, etc. And the only problem was there was no room in the house, so he actually slept on a landing with his brother. And in 1914, like, he joined the British Army. I was always wondering why. It was sheer poverty.
Yeah, as a lot of people
exactly,
did.
Exactly, yeah. So it was, he joined the British Army, and that's where the character kind of ends. He comes back to take revenge for his brother's death. He's caught, he's sent down to Dublin Castle, he's given a choice, go into the Monto and find this agent or else be shot. So obviously he goes for the easy option, goes into the Monto. And it's his journey through the nighttime of the Monto and the characters that come up.
Yeah. Would it have been likely to happen that when he was there for the criminal justice system and going to Dublin Castle, that he would be recruited to be an undercover person to find a serial killer as such?
He's got a good reason. It's either die or else go into the Monto and work for the British. Now, he was a British Army guy himself, so he would have, that was his home. So there would have been no problem to him, because he didn't think the Rising was a good idea as a strategy. He thought it was, a lot of the Dublin people didn't actually agree with it, because it was inconvenient. It seemed like a lost cause. So he kind of would say, yeah, okay, I'll do this. I've no problem with this, you know. And it was the week after the Rising, and everybody was kind of, oh, you know, this is a bit of a mess. The town's a mess. What's happening here? And then the British stole defeat from the jaws of victory and started to execute the leaders. So I was fascinated with that period between a lot of people not really going along with it. And literally within a couple of weeks, it swung the other way. Because the election, I think it was
1919,
Sinn Féin walked it, you know. So it went from home rule to be nicey-nicey all the way. It swung the other way.
Yeah, because you don't mess up with people, because they were executed and their bodies were taken without the bodies being given back to the family, just dumped into limestone. You don't do that in Ireland.
No, you don't do that.
You have to have wakes and things.
Like the Ukraine war.
Yeah.
I mean, Mr. Putin thought he'd walk in. People said, no, this isn't going to happen. So the people began to swing the other way. So
you decide to write on it, and it's good to say write about what you know. In a way, you've gone back in your family history to have
an anchor. And the grandfather was the anchor, you know. And then the Monto itself, that's one of the main characters.
Right, why did you pick it? Was there any connection, or were you just fascinated and you married two ideas together?
I just married two ideas together. Yeah. I mean, the Monto, I didn't know it existed. I mean, I never read about it in history books. I went to Christian Brothers School.
You sang the song, though.
You
didn't know what you were singing. But
I thought the Monto was in the Phoenix Park. Yeah. I don't know, I got this idea into my head. The Monto, it's a hill, but it was named after Montgomery Street. It was shortened to the Monto, you know. And the Monto itself is a fascinating, I looked at a map once, and there's only a few main streets. You say to yourself, it couldn't have been that big, but I got a survey map out, and it really was a warren of lanes and alleyways and things like that, and small little cottage areas with just cottages in it, rather than the bigger bordellos, I suppose you call them, or the brothels, where you could actually eat and drink and have a good time, you know.
You were saying earlier on your football fan. Troy Parrott, who scored a great goal against Scotland. I mean, he grew up in St. Mary's Mansions, and that are, I think they might be knocked down or something, but that was on Sean McDermott Street, right in the heart of the Monto. So
there's very little left of the Monto. I think there's a wall. I think there's a wall from the Magdalene Laundry. I know there is a tour there on Saturdays, which I want to take, but I couldn't with COVID. A guy called Terry Fagan, I think he does tours on Saturday morning. So I need to go onto Facebook and sort that out, just to get the feel of the area, you know?
Yeah. There's one thing in the book that that I didn't know. I thought we were all sort of atheists and Christians or something back in 1916. But there was this Muslim guy in the middle of your story.
Oh,
and
Musa.
He was drinking some Algerian wine as well, which I don't know how devout or whatever, but there was the Quran. So, I mean, was there much evidence of people with a different culture, religion back in those days?
Yeah, I think so. It was... like the main reason, the engine behind the Manto would have been the barracks, the British barracks, and the local thing. But there would have been a lot of sailors going in and out of Dublin port. So I think Musa probably came in on a ship, was stranded, got a job as a doorman in one of the brothels, and that's how he came about. But I think the past is more complicated than we think. It wasn't just, you know, Catholics and Protestants or whatever. I think there was a big mix. And the fact that the Manto was like a Casablanca type situation, a lot of sailors would have gravitated towards that. As you come into port, you're probably asking, where do you go? Oh, the Manto, this area here, which is very near, as you know, like the Liffey docks, you know. So I thought it was an interesting character just to bring him in there as well.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, I do know Muslims that do partake.
Right, okay. Well done on putting all together. You know, you must be delighted. You know, it was your first venture.
It's great to see it coming out. Fair play to Poolbag.
Yeah, so what type of book is it for people now reviewing?
It's a historical thriller, I suppose. That's the main thing. I was just thinking about that the other day, actually. It's very hard to encapsulate. It's like Jack the Ripper meets Strumpet City. People know Strumpet City, you know, so it's that kind of creepy thriller thing, you know, and it's the first volume. I'm going to do another one on the era around the War of Independence and then one on the Civil War. So it's kind of dragged the same characters through the situation and then to look at the situation of, you know, the reality of what was going on there, where people lived, the deaths and things like that, you know, the assassinations, what they were really like, rather than gloss over stuff like that. You know?
Yeah, and of course you've got in the same era, but area is Bloody Sunday. So
exactly, yeah, that'll come.
A lot of people from around the Manto were shot and killed.
Yeah, it was a terrible area. And one thing I didn't know, like my editor, Gay Shortland, she pointed out, there was a lot of... you couldn't go out after 8 o'clock at night. There was curfews all over the place, so that would have affected people as well. Shut up in your house, and the whole thing just bubbled up, I think.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. But good to meet you, Tony.
Thanks very much.
And it's published by Poolbag Crimson, and it's The Murder in Manto by Tony O'Reilly.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Available everywhere or whatever.
Yeah, all good bookshops.
Okay, very good. Tony O'Reilly, thanks very much indeed. Murder in Manto. Morning show.